What does it mean to be a people now that we have been exiled from our land? What does it mean to be joined now that we are dispersed all over the world? And the answers, the paragraph is saying, is all provided in the matzah.
The Tikva Fund is proud to present the Haggadah, a political classic, a series of 8 audio recordings that together make up a full course on the most beloved and most popular work of Jewish liturgy. Our teacher is Rabbi Dr. Meir Soloveitchik of Congregation Sherith Israel, the oldest Jewish congregation in the United States. Rabbi Soloveitchik is also the director of the Zahava and Moshe L. Strauss Center for Torah and Western Thought at Yeshiva University. In these lectures, you'll hear Rabbi Soloveitchik explore the text of the Haggadah as a source of political and moral wisdom, bringing out its deeper arguments about family, memory, and the human condition, about politics and freedom, about history and sacrifice. This episode is The Meaning of Matzah, Positive Freedom and Negative Freedom.
My favorite Pesach story of all took place during the American Civil War. And we know of this anecdote because of the recollections of one Joseph Joel, who served in a Union regiment from Ohio, and several years after the war recalled the tale that I am about to tell. He describes how in 1862 he and his regiment were stationed in the middle of nowhere in Sewell Mountain, West Virginia. With Pesach in the offing, he asked permission on behalf of himself and all of his fellow Jews, around 20 in all, from his regimental commander to organize a Seder. His regimental commander, by the way, though he does not report this, was Rutherford B. Hayes, future president of the United States. Hayes readily granted the request, and Joel tells us that our next business was to find some suitable person to proceed to Cincinnati, Ohio, to buy us matzos. Our sutler was one who provided goods to the soldiers. Our sutler, being a co-religionist and going home to that city, readily undertook to send them. We were anxiously awaiting to receive our matzos, and about the middle of the morning of Erev Pesach, a supply train arrived in camp, and to our delight, 7 barrels of matzahs. We were now able, he writes, to keep the Seder nights if we could only obtain the other requisites for that occasion. Horseradish and parsley we could not obtain, but in lieu we found a weed whose bitterness, I apprehend, exceeded anything our forefathers enjoyed. Lacking wine, here I'm adding, Joel decided to utilize an alcoholic cider for the Arba Kosot. We are further informed by Joel that, quote, the necessaries for the charutzis, that's charoset, we could not obtain. So we got a brick, which, rather hard to digest, reminded us by looking at it, for that purpose it was intended. And so, with, in general, the required components of the Seder, Joel proceeded to lead his Union soldiers that Passover evening. And he writes, the ceremonies were passing off very nicely until we arrived at the part where the bitter herb was to be taken. We all had a large portion of the herb ready to eat. At the moment, I said the blessing. Each ate his portion, when horrors, what a scene ensued in our little congregation, it is impossible for my pen to describe. The herb was very bitter and very fiery, like cayenne pepper, and excited our thirst to such a degree that we forgot the law authorizing us to drink only 4 cups. And the consequence was we drank up all the cider. Those that drank the more freely became excited. Excited means drunk. And one thought he was Moses, another Aaron, and one had the audacity to call himself a Pharaoh. The consequence was a skirmish, with nobody hurt. Only Moses, Aaron, and Pharaoh had to be carried to the camp. And then he concludes, there in the wild woods of West Virginia, away from home and friends, we consecrated and offered up to the ever-loving God of Israel our prayers and sacrifice. I doubt whether the spirits of our forefathers, had they been looking down on us, standing there with our arms by our side, ready for an attack, faithful to our God and our cause, would have imagined themselves amongst mortals, enacting this commemoration of the scene that transpired in Egypt. Since then, I have myself received a number of wounds, all but mortal, But there is no occasion in my life that gives me more pleasure and satisfaction than when I remember the celebration of Passover of 1862. End quote. Now, why is this such a striking story? I believe the answer is twofold. The first is how this tale represents a marvelous reification of the Haggadah's exhortation that b'chol dor v'dor chayav adam lerot et atzmo kilu yatzah mimitzrayim. In every generation, one is obligated to see oneself as if he or she has just left Egypt. These troops may have been overly excited, yet it is remarkable that their minds immediately traversed thousands of years so that they were transformed into Moses, Aaron, and Pharaoh. This is a West Virginian version of the Haggadah's command. As Yosef Chaim Yerushalmi has stressed, Jewish texts speak constantly, not of history, but of memory. More than anything, it is memory, a union with the past, what Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik has called a unitive time consciousness. This is at the center of the Seder, and this binds us together as Jews. The best phrase in English to describe this phenomenon was given to us by Abraham Lincoln, who in his first inaugural sought to invoke the power of memory in preventing civil war. And he said, "I am loath to close. We are not enemies, but friends. We must not be enemies. Though passion may have strained, it must not break our bonds of affection. The mystic cords of memory, stretching from every battlefield and patriot grave to every living heart and hearthstone all over this broad land, will yet swell the chorus of the Union when again touched, as surely they will be, by the better angels of our nature." These are Lincoln's words. And Lincoln was, of course, unsuccessful. The cords of memory binding Americans at the time were perhaps insufficiently mystic to keep American from killing American. But the mystic cords of memory bind Jews generations past and present. And it stretches back, as Joel's story illustrates, many, many, hundreds and thousands of years. So that mystic cords of memory is the first striking aspect of this tale. The second thing to notice in his story is the loyalty that these Jews show to their people and to their faith when they are, all things considered, in the middle of nowhere. No one will judge them as to whether they have a Seder. Their families are not there. Their fathers and mothers will not be looking upon them and deciding whether they are the wise or the wicked son. They can do whatever they want. They're surrounded by Christian Americans. They are, as Joel puts it, in the wild woods away of West Virginia, away from home and friends. And nevertheless, there in the wilderness, they remain loyal. They answer the call of the mystic cords of memory. And as he puts it, they offer up to the ever-living God of Israel their prayers and their sacrifice, united thereby, in his felicitous phrase, to the spirits of our forefathers looking down on us. Our topic today is one of the centerpieces of the Seder, the food, the bread that Joel and his comrades were eagerly awaiting on Erev Pesach. Matzah. Matzah, first ingested at the Exodus, eaten throughout Jewish history, sometimes baked fresh in time for Pesach, sometimes arriving on Erev Pesach by train in a barrel, and sometimes, as today, baked, as far as I can tell, 15 years before, and then put in a box and sold at a high markup. Whatever form in which it appears to us, matzah, as we will see, contains several important themes that are at the heart of the Haggadah as a political masterpiece and as a description in the Haggadah of what it means to be a Jew. We will be focusing especially on these two themes that I emphasize from Private Joel's story that lie at the heart of what it means to hold, to hand over, and to eat matzah. The mystic cords of memory binding us, past, present, and future, and the loyalty that Jews throughout their history have shown to God in the wilderness. And seeing these themes within matzah will allow us to reach not only a better understanding of what this seemingly poorly baked bread actually represents. But it will also allow us to achieve a better appreciation of Jewish nationhood itself. So let us begin our analysis of matzah with a moment that took place around 67 years before the Seder of Joseph Joel. On July 4th, 1776, immediately after approving the Declaration of Independence, the Continental Congress advanced the following resolution: that Dr. Franklin, Mr. J. Adams, and Mr. Jefferson be a committee to bring in a device for a seal for the United States of America. Of the three founders, two put forward suggested seals that incorporated profoundly biblical images. Franklin, according to his own notes, suggested as the national seal a picture of Moses standing at the shore and extending his hand over the sea, thereby causing the same, meaning the sea, to overwhelm Pharaoh, who was sitting in an open chariot, a crown on his head and a sword in his hand. Rays from a pillar of fire in the clouds reaching to Moses express that he acts by command of the deity. And underneath the image, Franklin added, would appear the following motto: rebellion to tyrants is obedience to God. That's Franklin's suggested seal for the United States. Jefferson, in contrast, according to John Adams's recollection, suggested a seal that bore a different image, also from the Hebrew Bible, also linked to the Exodus story: the children of Israel in the wilderness, led by a cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. Now, in the end, of course, Congress adopted neither of these proposals, ultimately, unfortunately, embracing as a national seal that creepy pyramid with the eye on it. I'm not sure what that's about. I think it has something to do, apparently, with a treasure map on the back of the Declaration of Independence. But while the Declaration's approval on the 4th of July is celebrated throughout the land, the tale of Franklin's and Jefferson's seals, which is a 4th of July story all its own, has been largely forgotten. The historian Michael Meyerson searched via Google every biography of Jefferson published since 1950, and of more than 200 Jefferson bios, only 12 described his great seal proposal. Those who have written on the suggestions of this congressional committee tend to equate the proposals of Franklin and Jefferson because both are taken from the Bible. In fact, however, the messages behind these two images are quite different. With the biblical tale of the splitting of the sea, Franklin is suggesting a scriptural story in which God himself miraculously intervenes into the natural order and redeems his people. Jefferson's symbol, in contrast, emphasizes the courage of the people of Israel to journey into the desert. It celebrates not the miracle performed by God, rather the miracle of the human spirit. Franklin chose to emphasize divine might made manifest against tyrants, whereas Jefferson is arguing that the seal of this newly born country should celebrate rather freedom as a journey, as a process, emphasizing the willingness of a people to persevere in tough times and to remain true to the values of its founding. Jefferson, then, is stressing the power that lies within. Franklin is emphasizing the power of God. So which is more important, focusing on all that God does for us or all that we are willing to do for him? The answer is that both are critical. And in truth, both these sides exist in the holiday, or rather holidays, that we are about to celebrate. The seven-day festival that we observe, or 8 days outside the land of Israel, is never actually called in the Torah by the appellation that we traditionally apply to it. We call this holiday Pesach. Nowhere in the Bible is this seven-day holiday called Pesach. Pesach refers to, actually, the day before this seven-day holiday, the 14th of Nisan, when the Pesach, the Paschal Lamb, was brought. The seven-day Yom Tov is, of course, called both in the Bible and in our rabbinic liturgy, what? Chag HaMatzot, the Festival of Matzah. And this name is appropriate because the 7 days mark the week in which we fled from Pharaoh into the desert, eating nothing but matzah, long after the biblical Pesach had already been brought and the plague that it defended us from had already occurred. So then why do we tend today to call the 7 day holiday not Pesach, but Chag HaMatzot? It was the mystical master, the Ari HaKadosh, who offered the following insight. He said that the two names embody a reciprocal relationship of love between God and the Jewish people. For us, the most striking aspect of the Exodus story is God acting on our behalf, hovering over our homes, protecting us from the plague of the firstborn, striking Egypt, splitting the sea, taking us out of slavery. For God, however, the most important element of the Exodus story is that right after this plague occurred, when God told us to go into the desert, we went with nothing but matzah, imperfectly baked bread, for sustenance. As we say in the Haggadah, matzah zo shanu achlim al shuma. Why do we eat matzah? Because we had to rush in the desert. Shenamar vayofu et matzor ugo matzor kilo chametz, ki gorshu mimitzrayim v'lo yechlu lehit mameya. We had to leave Egypt, and we could not delay. So matzah represents our willingness to follow God into the desert. Said the Ari, God, out of love, calls this holiday Pesach, commemorating for many days. Jews, out of love, call this holiday Pesach, commemorating for many days what God did for us. But God calls these 7 days the festival of Matzot, commemorating what we were willing to do and where we were willing to go for him. And so he reiterates at the end of the first chapter of Jeremiah, Kol Amar Hashem Zecharti Lachesed Nurayach Avat Kulotayach Lechtech Acharai Bamidbar. Thus says the Lord, I remember the loyalty of your youth, your bridal love, that you followed me into the desert, into an unsown land. Thus, Matzah represents, and the name Chaga Matzot represents, exactly what Jefferson was emphasizing with his seal. Freedom as a journey, and the willingness of human beings to begin what is a long and difficult sojourn into the unknown. And we can note, as a matter of human interest, that some of the most famous matzah in America also featured a journey or journeys into the unknown. And here I cite the Encyclopedia of Jewish Food. In 1886, a man by the name of Rabbi Dov Ber Abramson from the Lithuanian town of Salant purchased the passport of a dead man to escape from Europe and possible conscription into the Russian army, the name on the document being Dov Ber Manashevitz. Using his new name, Manashevitz immigrated to Cincinnati, where he served as a ritual slaughterer and part-time peddler. For his first Passover in America, with matzah impossible to obtain, Manashevitz made his own. 2 years later, he started a small matzah bakery in his basement for family and friends. Demand grew both from the Jewish community and from an unexpected market. At the time, Cincinnati was a prominent starting point for pioneers heading west. These are non-Jewish pioneers, mind you, who needed durable and non-perishable items to take in their wagons for the lengthy, dangerous trip. Says the encyclopedia, matzah's keeping ability proved ideal for pioneers. In other words, let's just pause this to ponder this Jewish success story for a moment. Manashevitz matzah took off in part because non-Jews bought it to eat on the American frontier. And Manashevitz goes on to found a matzah empire. Now flash forward decades later to December 1972, when Apollo 17 lands on the moon and Gene Cernan, along with his pilot Harrison Schmitt, becomes the last men to date to walk on the lunar surface. If you read, as I have, the transcript of the broadcast that was transmitted throughout the world from the moon, you will see that Gene Cernan, watching the lunar rover, said the following on live feed to all of America. He said, Manashevitz, look at that go. Where did that come from? Okay. Apparently, being on live feed, the astronauts were warned not to use profanity and had to use substitutes. Thus, NASA's website reports, and this is actually on NASA's website, the B. Manashevitz Company has long been a major American producer of kosher foods. During Apollo 17, Gene often used Manashevitz as an exclamation or as a substitute for swearing, end quote. So to recap, matzah in America becomes the food of the American frontier, and it thereby becomes so famous that it was even mentioned by the last man on the moon as he walked in space. And space, as we know, is the final frontier. Think of the poetry. Matzah becomes the food of the American West, and it is striking historical happenstance that Thomas Jefferson was the man who helped expand the American West through the Louisiana Purchase. And he was also the man who had selected as the symbol of this country Israel's faithful journey into the frontier. And it's also striking that a reference to Manashevitz matzah was made by Gene Cernan as he became the last man to walk on the moon, because the whole concept of Chag HaMatzot and of the symbol of freedom that matzah represents is, from God's perspective, the power and the courage of the human spirit and the willingness of a people to journey into the unknown with trust and faith in God. And that, of course, is what matzah is supposed to mean to us as well. Harrison Schmitt, Gene Cernan's co-pilot, ended up going into politics, and he became a senator from New Mexico. And when he ran for re-election, his challenger faced a problem, which was, how do you run against a national hero, one of the last men to walk on the moon? What do you say against him? What could you possibly do? And so in a flash of brilliance, his opponent ran the following commercial. Harrison Schmitt, what on earth has he done for you lately? Pesach, the word, represents, as we will see in the next lecture, heaven coming down to earth, what God has done for us on this world. Matzah embodies what we are willing to do and where we are willing to go on behalf of heaven. So to speak of matzah then as the bread of freedom is to evoke the same image as Jefferson was attempting in his suggested seal. Only here we are choosing not a picture, but a physical food. Matzah represents freedom as a journey. In one of our previous lectures, we noted how the name Chag HaMatzot is linked to haste, to utilizing every bit of time properly, to the alacrity with which matzah is produced, and the connection in Jewish thought between alacrity, time, and freedom. But this too links to another symbolism of matzah, which is the food of one who is engaged in a perilous, courageous, faithful sojourn. Because matzah truly is the food of the nomad, of journeying. As Dr. Tova Dickstein of Neot Kedumim, a botanical institute in Israel, noted, the bread that Egyptians ate was leavened bread. Egypt was known as a land of grain and bread. Long before the Israelites came to Egypt, she writes, Egyptians had learned the secret of leavening bread, even discovering the secrets of what we now call sourdough or starter. Bakeries, she writes, that have been found in Egypt from the period that the children of Israel lived there actually contain large ovens for the baking of leavened bread. In contrast, she writes, shepherds like Abraham, ate unleavened bread. Nomads cannot carry a heavy oven with them as they travel from place to place, nor can they wait for the dough to rise. So they make matzah, just as was the case when the time came for the Israelites to flee from Pharaoh and the Egyptians. And we see this in several stories before the people of Israel leave Egypt. In Genesis 18, as she notes, when Abraham was visited by three angels, he instructs Sarah, Mahari, hurry up and prepare ugot, cakes, meaning round, flat, unleavened breads. In Genesis 19, Abraham's nephew, Lot, quickly baked matzot, unleavened bread, for the angels whom he brought home from the city gate. Even today, she writes, nomadic desert Bedouins bake unleavened bread, similar to those baked by the Israelites as they left Egypt. And so, matzot are shepherd's bread, nomad's bread, the bread of one who is on a journey. And to speak of the festival of freedom as Chag HaMatzot is to speak of freedom as and the story of the Jewish people as a journey through history. It communicates the idea that physical liberation is just the first moment, but it is the beginning of a journey that the Jewish people are still engaged in. And for a Jew to hold a piece of matzah is to remind him or herself that the journey continues still. And when we study the evolution of the Haggadah, we can notice this theme becoming more prominent at a specific period in Jewish history. The Haggadah having a passage added that stresses that matzah represents our willingness to sojourn, our courage in the face of uncertainty, and the connection between matzah and the Jewish journey through time. All this becomes more prominent at a certain point. And this brings us to the way matzah is introduced in our current version of the Haggadah. That is the paragraph known as Halach Ma'anya. Let us ponder this paragraph for a moment and its complexities, but also the enigmas with which it presents us. What does the paragraph actually say? Halach ma'anya, ti'achalu avatana ba'ara de Mitzrayim. This is the poor bread that our ancestors ate in Egypt. Kol dechvin yetevi yechol, kol detzrich yetevi yifsach. All who are hungry, come and eat. All who need to join a Passover Seder, come and join. Hashata hacha, now we are here. L'shana haba ba'ara di Yisrael. Next year, may we be in the land of Israel. Hashata avdei, now we are slaves. L'shana haba b'nei chorin. Next year, may we be free men. To the sensitive reader of the Haggadah, this entire paragraph is strange for several reasons. And these problematic aspects actually stick out once you notice them. They are jarring. First, unlike the rest of the Haggadah, this paragraph appears in Aramaic rather than in Hebrew. Second, what does the Haggadah mean when we are informed that this matzah is the poor bread that was eaten by our ancestors in the land of Egypt? Later in the Haggadah, we are told that this is the bread our ancestors ate, not in Egypt, but when? When they left Egypt. Why do we will say later, why do we eat this matzah? Because we rushed out of Egypt. So what are you talking about that we ate matzah in Egypt? Some interpret this to mean that our ancestors ate matzah while they were slaves in Egypt. The problem, of course, is the Bible makes no such mention of this. And on the contrary, the slaves complain that their food in Egypt was kind of awesome. Zacharnu et hadagar shenochal b'mitzrayim chinam. I remember the fish that we would just take out of the water. Et ha-kishuim et ha-vatechim. Cucumbers, melons. That's what they had there. All of a sudden, leaving Egypt, they went on a high-carb diet. But before that, they had all sorts of foods. So there's no mention of the fact that the Israelites ate matzah while slaves in Egypt. Third, that's the second problem. The third problem, the sentences that follow this statement, this is the bread of the poor bread that our ancestors ate in Egypt, the sentences that follow are seeming non sequiturs. This is the poor bread our ancestors ate in Egypt. All who are hungry, come and eat. Here's some terrible bread. Who wants some? What's the possible connection between these two? And then, all who need a Passover Seder, come join us. Today we are here, next year in the land of Israel. Today we are slaves, next year we may be free. There's no obvious connection between any of these sentences. What is going on here? The answer begins in the realization that this paragraph is in Aramaic, because even though now in our Haggadot it introduces the telling of the story of the Exodus, actually it is one of the latest paragraphs in the story of in the Haggadah as we have it today, telling the story of the Exodus. It is in Aramaic because it was written after the destruction of the temple. And it was written not in the land of Israel, but in Babylonia. Hence the phrase, now we are here, next year may we be in the land of Israel. And it was written and added to the original text of Haggadah because our ancestors, following the destruction of Jerusalem, were pondering the following problem. How can we celebrate the festival of freedom when we are not free? What does it mean to eat of the bread of freedom that marks a journey to the promised land when we are slaves and we have been exiled from the promised land? And so even though later in the Haggadah, matzah is described as the bread that was eaten while leaving Egypt, all of a sudden a new focus on matzah emerges, on the matzah that our ancestors ate while they were in Egypt. And here the reference is not to when our ancestors were slaves for hundreds of years. Rather, the focus is on the night before the dawn of freedom, when all of our forefathers sat in their homes eating of the Paschal Lamb. But what did they also eat with that Paschal Lamb? Matzah. They had not yet left. And nevertheless, they were commanded that umatzot amarorim yochluhu. You should only eat this with matzah and not with chametz. And the reason why they were told to do so, why are they eating matzah at this moment? They're not rushing out of Egypt yet. But once you understand that matzah represents the bread of nomads, the bread of the journey, what is being communicated to them, still slaves in Egypt, is that the journey that began with our ancestor, the journey of Abraham, the shepherd, that journey is about to continue through you. And so they ate the matzah in preparation for that journey, leaving behind Egypt and preparing for their sojourn. Or as Tova Dickstein put it, just as God revealed himself to Abraham and took him from his settled pagan homeland to embark on a nomadic journey as a shepherd, so too they ate matzah that evening, because God at that moment revealed himself to Abraham's descendants in Egypt and brought them from the most settled and civilized land of that epoch to lead them on their journey. And so Halach Ma'anya is written because Jews, after the exile began with the temple in ruins, made the following argument. Once Israelites were slaves in Egypt and nevertheless ate matzah as a symbol of the journey on which they were about to embark, which was a continuation of Abraham's journey. And so we too are slaves in whatever Egypt we may be. But we tonight eat matzah in the faith that our journey throughout history will continue. They held up the symbol of their sojourn. And they said, just as the people of Israel in Egypt continued the journey of Abraham, so too we are still continuing the journey of Abraham. Abraham's journey was to the promised land. The people in Egypt journeyed to the promised land. And we eat matzah, the symbol of journey, in order to illustrate that we too are continuing this journey, which will ultimately end once again in the promised land. That is how Halach Ma'anya first gets introduced, as a sign of hope at a moment when the reason for observing the Festival of Freedom was not obvious at all. And this brings us to the next sentences of that paragraph. All who are hungry, come and eat. And the point being made here is that if the Israelites are still engaged in a journey on behalf of God, then the matzah reminds us not only that this journey is ongoing, but that this journey binds us together. Let me explain this point. One of my areas of interest, as is evident, is Pesach Seders that took place throughout American history. And many such Seders have been marvelously reassembled by David Geffen in his American Haggadah. David Geffen, by the way, is the grandson of Rabbi Tobias Geffen, the man who first achieved rabbinical supervision for Coca-Cola. He was the man who made Coca-Cola kosher, thereby ensuring his legacy as the greatest hero in the history of the United States. But his grandson's Haggadah is good, too. And one photo in the Haggadah caught my attention. And it is of a Seder in 1919 of a train car from a Pullman train in which many Jewish GIs sit and they are doing a Seder. This, the Haggadah informs us, are a group of Jewish soldiers in a car on a railroad siding in the railroad yards of Detroit, Michigan. Soldiers returning from Europe were on their way to Camp Grant near Chicago to be discharged. When it became clear that they could not get to Illinois in time for the beginning of Pesach, the Jewish Welfare Board arranged a Seder for them on the train route and obtained a rabbi to officiate in the dining car for what, as the Haggadah puts it, may have been the first and last train Seder in history, end quote. And as I pondered this picture, I realized that a train actually is the perfect place to celebrate Pesach. In his book, Civility, Yale law professor Stephen Carter notes that in the 19th century, everyone traveled by train. Whether it was first, second, or third class, everyone traveled together. And they were forced, therefore, to sacrifice a bit for each other, to treat each other with civility, in order to make the ride more bearable. And so they purchased guides to proper behavior, like a book by Isaac Peebles with rules like politeness on railroads include whispering, loud talking, and immoderate laughing and singing should not be indulged by any passenger. And they observed these rules. Now, Stephen Carter writes with dismay, everyone travels by car. We travel both long and short distances surrounded by metal and glass and the illusion that we are traveling alone. This illusion has seeped into every crevice of our public and private lives. And so we no longer see each other as fellow passengers. The Volkswagen advertisement, says Carter, says it all. On the road of life, there are passengers and there are drivers, with the commercial concluding, drivers wanted. So according to this approach, everyone should be a driver. Everyone ought to pave their own path through life. No one ought to have fellow passengers, fellow travelers. No one ought to sacrifice for our fellow man. In contrast, the Seder itself is a reminder that we began our journey into the wilderness together. That once we sat in Egypt during the plague of the firstborn, ingesting matzah, just like these soldiers, and just like those soldiers on the train, we were all packed up and ready to go. How are we supposed to dress according to the Torah at that first observance of the Passover? Matnechem chagurim u'makalchem biyadchem. Your loins girded, your walking staffs in your hand. We were all set, all packed, but like them, not allowed to leave till the next day. We started this journey together. And Halach Ma'anya is saying that if our journey through history continues, then this experience binds us and obligates us to each other. The memory of the founding of our faith and of our people reminds us that as our sojourn continues, it connects us to one another, obligating us to care for and sacrifice for one another. And so we say as follows, Halach Ma'anya Diachalu Avatana Ba'ara de Mitzrayim. This is the poor bread that our ancestors ate in Egypt, preparing for their journey, which was about to begin. They were still slaves, but their journey and the journey of Abraham was going to continue. So too we are slaves, but our journey is also going to continue. Moreover, because this journey continues, we remain one nation, connected to one another. We do not yet have our land or our freedom, but we remain a nation. We remain bound, and therefore, kol dechvin yetevi echal, all who are hungry come and eat, all who need a Pesach, please join us. Our ancestor, Avraham, had begun a journey from Mesopotamia to the Promised Land at the very beginning of the story of our nation. And then in Egypt once, we began a journey to the Promised Land, and that made us into a nation. And now we are saying that remaining a nation, the matzah reminds us that our journey will ultimately achieve its goal. Hashata hacha l'shana haba ba'arad Yisrael. Hashata avde l'shana haba b'nei chorin. That is what Halach Ma'anya is saying. And it is added after the destruction as a way of grappling with the following profound questions. What does it mean to be a people now that we have been exiled from our land? What does it mean to be joined now that we are dispersed all over the world? And the answers, the paragraph is saying, is all provided in the matzah. There is a tradition among some Jews at the moment of Halach Ma'anya, at the first moment in the Seder that the matzah is introduced, that actually brings this point to life. In one description of a Sephardic Seder, Italian and Moroccan Jews at this moment in the Seder would have ready 3 pieces of matzah tied up in a napkin like a little sack. The sack would be passed around the table shoulder to shoulder. First, the sack would be held on the person's right shoulder, and then the leader of the Seder would ask him or her, "Where are you from?" And the person with the shoulder sack would say, "I am from Egypt." The leader then asked the same person, "Where are you going?" And the person with the sack would shift it to the left shoulder and say, "I am going to Yerushalayim. Will you come with me?" The sack is then passed to the next person at the table who says, "Yes, I will come with you." And this tradition beautifully embodies matzah as the symbol of a journey, but also how only together as one people can our travels through time truly continue. The matzah, the symbol of this Jewish journey, which we hand to each other, which we bear on our shoulders, is what binds us together and symbolizes the oneness of our nationhood, despite it all. And here an important political insight emerges from the Seder and from the Haggadah, from Halach Ma'anya and from the Matzah. An insight that sets Israel apart from other nations, and also one that highlights traditional Judaism's disagreement with those who at times may have wished that Israel be more like other nations. The opening words of the Israeli Declaration of Independence, added at the last moment by David Ben-Gurion, read as follows. Be'eretz Yisrael kam ha'am ha'yudi. And according to the official English translation of the Israel Ministry of Foreign Affairs, this is meant to mean, in the land of Israel, the Jewish people was born. In Hebrew, it is a succinct and lovely statement. Be'eretz Yisrael kam ha'am ha'yudi. There's only one problem with it, which is that according to traditional Judaism, it's not true. The Jewish people are born before they enter the land. Of course, they are journeying toward the land. The land is central, but their nationhood is formed before the land. Michael Visegrad once noted how unusual this is. Nowhere else in the memory of any peoples is entry into the land remembered. A people is born out of a soil which is its mother. Usually the people does not predate the land. But that's not how it works for the people of Israel. The Haggadah and its execution emphasizes the opposite. That what formed us was this journey into the desert. What formed us was all that matzah represents. Or as the minhag that I just mentioned actually explains. Where are you from? Egypt. Where are you going? Yerushalayim. Will you come with me? Yes, I will come with you. It is the journey to the land that formed the nation. The land was their destiny and their destination. But due to the journey, the people of Israel were a nation, was a nation, before we actually arrived. And therefore, as Halach Maanya is stating, because we were formed as a nation in our journey before we entered the land, we can remain a nation while exiled from the land. Because this journey bound us together, therefore, if even dispersed throughout the world, our sojourn through history continues, then we remain bound to one another as a nation, no matter how far apart we may actually be. This, then, is the meaning of the matzah. What it teaches us about freedom is that physical freedom was only the beginning of a journey through history which connects us to one another. What it teaches us about nationhood is that it was that original willingness to engage in that journey which began on that night in Egypt as we ate matzah, ti'achalu avatana ba'ar de Mitzrayim, and then as we courageously journeyed into the wilderness with such haste that we could only bake matzah again. That is what formed us into a people. And the memory of that moment and the faith that this journey continues, that is what makes us a nation today. The land is central. It is always in our sights. Hashatahacha l'shana haba ba'ara di Yisrael. But we remain, because of what the matzah illustrates, always one nation no matter where we are, and therefore obligated to one another. Kol dichvin yete v'yechol. We are connected, as it were, by the mystic cords of memory that Lincoln described. But the cords of memory stretch back much further than 67 years. These cords of memory go back to the journey from Egypt and the journey of Abraham, both of which matzah itself recalls. And indeed, as Jews continue their sojourn, their dispersion, their journey through the generations, at various moments we find how matzah itself represented again and again the bond that we share despite it all. The historian Bertram Korn, in his book American Jewry in the Civil War, briefly records a tale of a Union soldier by the name of Meyer Levy, who found himself during Passover in an occupied Virginia town late in the war, meaning he was in the Union Army, they were occupying a conquered Virginia town. He passed one house, and he saw this Virginian child eating matzah, because it was Pesach. So Levy, quote, asked the boy for a piece of matzah. The child fled indoors, shouting at the top of his lungs, "Mother, there's a damn Yankee Jew outside." The mother then invited Levy in for the Passover meal. Now, this is a fascinating tale, and interestingly, research on this story was done by Elke Weber, the author of a children's book based on this story, which is called The Yankee at the Seder. You can get it for your kids. And she reports that Meyer Levy had told the story to his family, who were members of my sister congregation, Mikveh Israel in Philadelphia. It was his niece, Miriam Levy, who wrote a letter about it to Korn, and he included it in his book. Now, we do not know the name of this Jewish Southern family that hosted this Union soldier, but consider the conflict that must have gone through this family's minds. The strong dislike, hatred would not be too strong a word, that a conquered Confederate family would have felt for a man in federal uniform. Yet in the end, as we noted, it is the matzah that forms us Jews as fellow passengers, fellow journeyers. In the end, it was the binding power that the matzah embodies that triumphed. Meyer Levy was invited in, and the Passover performance commenced, joining Jewish Confederates who had just lost the war and the damn Yankee Jew that had defeated them. Enemies that were brothers, the victorious and the defeated, saying together, Halach ma'anya di'achalu avatana ba'ara de Mitzrayim, kol dechvin yete v'yechol. In the end, to hold the matzah is to come into contact with something tactile but also spiritual that lies at the heart of the Passover experience. The mystic cords of memory that unites Jews and that can join them together no matter how deep the ideological divide. As Lincoln put it, we are not enemies but friends. We must not be enemies. This Richmond Seder was not the only one in which the matzah's mystical communion was made manifest. For while all who are hungry come and eat may have been fulfilled by one Southern family on behalf of one Union soldier, it was also carried out by thousands of Northern Jews on behalf of their brethren in the South. David Geffen in his American Haggadah reports, or I think he reports this elsewhere, David Geffen reports that toward the end of the Civil War, the Jews of Savannah, Georgia, found themselves without a matzah bakery for the coming holiday. Through a campaign overseen by Isaac Leeser of Philadelphia and my predecessor, J.J. Lyons of Sheirith Israel in New York, 35 Northern synagogues, companies, and individuals contributed $502.90 for the baking of 3,000 pounds of matzah. The matzah was then sent southward. Writes David Geffen, it was never known if the matzah ever arrived until the recent discovery of an article titled Matzah Passover Bread in the March 30th edition of the Savannah Daily Herald, which reads as follows. This is several days before Pesach. Appomattox was April 6th, and Pesach was the next night. So this is 7 days before the Civil War is over and 9 days or 8 days before Pesach. And the newspaper reports, this morning 13 cases of matzah Passover bread were received by the steamer U.S. Grant. The bread, a contribution of the Israelites of the North to their brethren in Savannah, this is what the Southern paper is reporting, is consigned to Mr. Brady. The Reverend A. Epstein, reader of Congregation Mikveh Israel in Savannah, is charged with the distribution. And then it adds, all who are able to pay for it will do so, and to those unable, it is a free will offering. End quote. Savannah Morning Herald. All who are hungry, come and eat. This is the poor man's bread that our ancestors ate in Egypt and which binds us together. As Geffen notes, although the Civil War still had a few more days to run, still the Jews of Savannah were able to observe the mitzvah of eating matzah on Passover. It foreshadowed the unbreakable ties between the Jews of the North and the South, which, thanks to the matzah campaign of 1865, had already begun to be rebuilt. Thus did Jews send matzah to Jews, the conqueror sending food to the conquered, seeing them not as foes but as family and fellow members of a people bound by the cords of memory which are invoked immediately by touching the very symbol of our journey throughout history together. Thus matzah emerges as one of the supreme and most sublime symbols of our national bond. We are not enemies, but friends. We must not be enemies. To hold the matzot is to reconnect with the mystic cords of memory that stretch from every hearth and hearthstone in Jewish homes, cords that connect us to one another. In my research on matzah and Passover seders that took place throughout history, I happened to come upon one story just several nights before. And it is on this with this story that I will conclude. This was printed in 2012 in the Jewish Veteran, which is a newsletter for Jews who served in the American Armed Forces. There's a letter written by a World War II veteran by the name of William Holkauer. So if you think this through, he's writing this letter in 2012. He's a World War II veteran. So he's essentially in his 90s writing about something that happened to him during the war. And he writes the following. He says, in 1945, I was an infantry soldier in the 76th Division of Patton's Army. We had broken through the Siegfried Line and were pursuing the German soldiers through Germany. Each day we would free a town, sometimes two. One day we freed a town. Our first task was to police the town, meaning we had to check each building for German soldiers. As I was walking down the main street checking the buildings, I came to what looked like a public building and entered it. The room was very large, and in the far end, I saw about 35 girls ages 15 to 39 standing. I walked up to them, stood before them, and they made no sound. I said, "Are you Nazis?" They said, "No." And then one said, "Sprechen Sie Deutsch?" And I said, "A bissel," which is not German. Okay. I then heard one whisper, "Eret Yiddish." He speaks Yiddish. The one next to her said, "Shh, zug gar nicht." Say nothing. When I heard that, I said, "Ich bin a Yid." I am a Jew. The girls got very excited and spoke some English. They told me that they were Hungarian Jews brought to this town to work in the factories. Several of the girls had large stomachs, and I asked if they were pregnant. I was told that this was a condition of malnutrition. We spoke for a while, and then I said I will leave and return in a short time. I went back to my company and picked up a package received from home and brought it to them. As I started to unwrap the package, I asked if they knew what today was. They said no. I said, "Today is Passover," and unwrapped a box of matzah. They were hysterical, most of them crying, and I cried too. It was very emotional. Then he writes, "After the war was over, I thought about that event and realized that we celebrate Passover for our freedom from slavery. And it was on Passover that these Hungarian Jews were freed from slavery." And then he concludes, "It has always been my dream to someday meet one or more of these girls and find out what happened to them. If you know of any Hungarian female over 79 years old who was a slave in Germany, tell them this story, and I would love to meet them." So you have a man who met these Jewish women very briefly, and in his one moment with them, just shared matzah with them. Kol dechvin yetev yechal. We are one nation. Freedom is not fully here, and you have just experienced one of the worst moments in Jewish history. But the Jews still exist. The nation still exists. And our journey through time continues. He meets them once and never sees them again, but every Pesach for the next 60, 70 years, they are in his mind, bound by the mystic cords of memory that matzah embodied. This is what matzah is meant to mean, the indissoluble bonds of Jews as fellow passengers, as fellow travelers. This is what it meant to the Jews of the North and the South. This is what it meant to this Jewish GI and those Hungarian Jews. And this, of course, is what matzah should mean for us. Thank you very much.